Hello from Vietnam.
Hi, Jimmy. How are you doing over there?
I'm good. I'm sitting in a, I guess I'm not sure if it is Airbnb. Probably it could come up on Airbnb. It's basically, I'd say this was pretty close to being an Airbnb hotel, or a short-term letting
Really?
hotel. It's,
Well, so there's no permanent residence there.
I don't know. I don't know. There seems to be an awful lot of tourists coming and going. The lobby is as busy as a hotel at certain times of day, like checkout time and check-in time. But it's nice enough. It's an interesting area. It's not an area of Saigon that I've stayed in before. It's much nearer the what they call the walking street, or the backpacker street, as it used to be known. And it's kind of very real out there. You're walking out of the apartment block and stepping over dogs and dancing around fruit trucks and
Sounds
carts.
fun. And you actually, I mean, you went there because you're finishing off your novel, aren't you? So you're meant to be sitting by your computer all the time. Is that happening, or are you
It's not
spending
all
all
the
your time
time.
stepping?
It's not, I'm not sitting by the computer all the time, but I'm doing getting a fair bit of work done. I
Oh.
gotta go out some, I gotta eat, and
Yeah.
there's so much to eat around here. Now that you've reminded me what I'm really supposed to be doing, I suppose we'd better get on with this podcast. We're going to talk today about a story that's just popped up here in Vietnam about overseas investors buying apartments and leaving them empty. And there's been a story in the Sydney Morning Herald about the government's plans for Airbnb.
Yeah, in
And
New South Wales, yeah.
yeah, and we will probably think of something else as while we're going, because we always do. I'm Jimmy Thompson. I write the Flat Chat column for this Australian Financial Review.
And I'm Sue Williams, and I write about property for the Sydney Morning Herald, the Melbourne Age, AFR, and Domain.
And this is the Flat Chat wrap. It's very funny to come to Vietnam and find stories that sound awfully familiar about apartment block investors.
Yes, because I think Vietnam changed the policy, didn't they? Because you used to only be able to buy property in Vietnam, like in many other places like Bali, if you went into a partnership with a local person. I
Yeah.
think they've changed that now, haven't they? Now you can buy a property in Vietnam, I think from about 2015. So foreigners can buy places, and I think a lot of Australians have.
Yeah, I think the problem in the past was that the people were going into partnerships with Vietnamese people, getting into disputes with them, and when they went to court, the courts were always finding in favor of the local people,
Of course.
and that deterred a lot of people from investing. But now there are huge apartment blocks springing up, or have been springing up, around certainly Saigon, Hanoi, and Da Nang. And this is where a lot of the investment money is going in, but it's also apparently where a lot of these apartments are sitting empty, with the overseas investors just wanting them to accrue some capital gains.
Well, that's not very good for city life, is it really? I mean, we've had similar problems in Sydney and Melbourne, particularly, and to some extent in Perth, where people have bought apartments and just haven't lived there. And it's kind of, we call it ghost apartments. And it's really hard for the other people living there because suddenly, there's not much community. I mean, we've actually lived next door to an empty apartment in Sydney for 20 years. And it's kind of nice in some ways because you don't get any noise. But on the other hand, it just seems an incredible waste. I mean, somebody could be living there, and it could be a doctor or a nurse or a aged care worker or somebody like that, somebody really useful. And unfortunately, they're having to live somewhere else because they can't afford to live, in this empty apartment next door. So yeah, it's pretty hard for everyone, I think, when people buy places and then just leave them empty.
I know that in London they're talking about bringing in a tax on empty apartments, because apparently a lot, and these are really sort of prestigious apartments, right in the center of the city. But the people who are buying them, money is no object to them. They just pay the tax. For
Absolutely.
from our point of view in Sydney, one of the problems is that the overseas investor, they put their money down, they buy the apartment. And then they just forget about it and they don't pay their levies because they think they'll pay their levies when the apartment is sold eventually.
Which is terrible for everybody else.
Yeah, because you're subsidizing somebody. And okay, the money might, well, it will come back in when the apartment is sold, but that doesn't help you in your day-to-day.
Sure. And I mean, that could be 20 years. And so all the people who are living there now are having to pay extra to maintain the building because they're not getting that money from that person's strata levies.
And it's hard to get people who live overseas to respond to legal action in your own country. It's hard to get in touch with them in a lot of cases. And threatening them with bankruptcy and things like that doesn't really work.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there's lots of overseas capital kind of around the market now. And they keep saying that Australia is the number one destination for lots of that overseas capital. And often it's residential property in Sydney, which is right at the top of the list. So lots of people from overseas are investing here. And when they don't particularly need the money, they are leaving apartments empty. So we kind of get a bit annoyed about that. But then it's interesting to think about Australians buying property in Vietnam and leaving it empty as well. So, you know, whatever one's race, we're all kind of as guilty as everyone else, really.
The big investors here in Vietnam are China. We forget that China's just right across the border and right across the other side of Halong Bay. And Singapore and I think Korea are the big investors here.
And also there's a lot of Russian money, I think, there, isn't there? Particularly in Da Nang.
Yes, indeed.
Because when you were talking about London earlier, lots of that money is either from the Middle East or from Russia.
Yep.
Maybe less now because it's harder for them to invest overseas, but many of them invest in offshore trust funds, so it's really hard to trace it. So, you know, the money is still there probably.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that the governments will look at is, do we want to really restrict these investors coming into the country and bringing their money in? Because it's hard enough to get these apartments built by, you know, using local money to get the construction industry going, because that's ultimately what we need is more housing. And if a small percentage of that housing sits empty, that's not good, but it's better than those houses, those apartments never being built.
Absolutely. So maybe the governments, I mean, both here and in Vietnam, could do something proactive and say to people who have apartments that are empty, we will pay you a small fee every month to let your apartment to somebody for social or affordable housing.
Yeah.
Because that would save the government money in building that social affordable housing, which is so badly needed. And at the same time, it would give a small income to people who have an apartment that's empty. Could there be some kind of discussion between the two, really?
I don't know. I mean, anecdotally, a lot of the overseas investors don't want anybody to have ever set foot in their apartment. You know, they literally, they sign the paper and don't even go in there until either they want to sell it or they want to move. A lot of them buy apartments for their kids to stay in while they're at university and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of settling down happening after COVID, but I think the pattern is starting to emerge again of a lot of young people from overseas looking for accommodation and having to take stuff that they really shouldn't be living in a lot of cases. But I'm looking out the window here at this apartment block, this Airbnb hotel, is 30 stories high. I'm sure there's a lot of long-term residents in here, but there's right across the alleyway, there's another 30-story building that's only half built. And it was fairly close. I would say, looking at it, I'd say it'd be about 6 months, maybe to a year away from completion. And then COVID hit and everything stopped. And even though Vietnam handled COVID better than most countries, a lot of the countries that didn't handle COVID particularly well withdrew their overseas investments, you know, because they were in trouble. So it's kind of sitting there. It's a bit of a monument to what happened in COVID. And halfway into the city, there's a huge, what's obviously been intended to be a luxury hotel of some sort, and it's just a concrete shell. But having
hopefully it's going to be picked up, isn't it, and finished off, all these buildings.
Well, it's funny. Just yesterday, I was walking to the sounds of clanking metal, and looked down, and in the area between where I'm staying and the half-finished building, there were a couple of guys moving construction stuff around. They looked to me as if they were either checking it or counting it. So maybe they're doing an audit before they start work on the building. But according to the same newspaper, the Vietnam Express, that had the story about overseas investors, no new buildings, no new apartment buildings were started in Saigon in the first 2 months of this year. So, yeah, obviously things are taking a while to get going again.
Sure. And it will just be your luck while you're staying in that apartment that the apartment building across the road will suddenly start work again being empty for 4 years.
Yeah, that's
and
that's,
then you will curse yourself for having said, what a shame these buildings haven't been built.
Absolutely. Complained about a barking dog the other day. There's a very strict no pets rule in this building, but somebody somewhere in the 34 stories and probably 300 apartments had decided to leave their dog on the balcony while they went out. And of course, anybody who understands dogs knows all the dog is going to do is bark and bark and bark until they're allowed back in. And so I complained to the host of the place, and about 20 minutes later, the barking stopped.
So that you didn't hear a gunshot as well, did you?
I didn't. I was listening for it, but I didn't hear it.
But it was funny with COVID. Last night, I went to the Film Critics Circle Awards of Australia, which is the
fabulous night out, I hear.
Yeah, it's kind of the annual Australian equivalent of the Golden Globes, but it is far less glamorous.
Yes.
It's incredibly less glamorous, in fact. You know, we had sandwiches to eat, and it was at an RSL club. And so it wasn't as fabulous as the one you see on TV. But, you know, it was a great range of Australian films, and it's the first time they've been held since COVID, really. And everybody was talking about the problems of filmmaking during COVID and also seeing films and reviewing films, but nobody would actually say the word COVID. It's really interesting. It became the thing that could not be named.
All right.
And I think a lot of people are doing that now because it just brings back so many, many dark memories for a lot of people. So we're kind of trying to wipe it. I think that's quite a healthy trend, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that I've been told in my various writings not to overstress COVID. It's like everybody really does want to move on. Yeah. I think we're all kind of wondering, did we have to go through all those lockdowns and things? And it's easier just to go, let's just think about the future than the past.
Apart from those unfortunate people who are still suffering, really, but
Okay. Sorry, it's really hard to keep this going when I can't see you, but it does help the sound. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new plans that the government might have to put some restrictions on Airbnbs and other short-term holiday lets. That's after this.
So it seems that in Sydney, we're getting finally a bit of movement on short-term lets on Airbnb and stays and those kind of companies, because Airbnb and stays have accepted that guests should pay a levy to fund social and affordable housing in New South Wales, which is good.
Mm.
But they do want the tax applied to all tourism accommodation, including hotels.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Which doesn't seem fair at all. I mean, hotels pay a huge chunk of their income in tax, whereas Airbnb and stays and people renting out accommodation, you know, haven't paid an enormous amount for a while, really.
Yeah,
but maybe it will go the way of Uber, which is just having to pay a huge amount to taxi drivers in compensation. You know, maybe Airbnb, you know, I don't know, maybe there's some court cases that the hotels might take against them. But anyway, there's all these short-term rental accommodation places, because I think a lot of people now say that there is a quantifiable effect on housing supply and on affordability in certain areas, you know, the kind of areas like Bondi Beach that people want to rent apartments in on the short term for a holiday, but it means that locals just can't afford them anymore.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we are going to get some movement, really.
Well, it's interesting because I was reading the Sydney Morning Herald story covering this morning, and they quote the Rose Jackson, the housing minister, who conceded that the legislation about short-term holiday letting has been deliberately light touch. They didn't want to put in too many rules because they don't want to affect tourism. And, you know, the Airbnb people are notorious. And I think it's one of the consequences of having an American company. They just come out with such bullshit all the time. And it's all false equivalences. And they refuse to recognize that apartments, especially going into short-term rentals, has any effect on the housing affordability and availability, or indeed has any effect on the lifestyles of the people who live in the apartments permanently. And this is the thing that really annoys me, especially the Victorian government and to a great extent the New South Wales government. They don't give a crap about people who live in apartments. They really don't.
Yeah. Out of sight, out of mind, really, I think.
I mean, you've got the people in customer services or whatever it's called these days, fair trading and all that, who it's their job to look after what's happening in apartments. And they do make efforts to make apartment living more attractive because they have to, because they need more people to live in apartments. And apart from them, you know, you look at the tourism people, you look at the Attorney General's office, you look at the finance people, they don't care. All they're looking at is that they say, oh, if we deter tourists from coming into the state, then Victoria will get them or Queensland will get them. And that's their prime concern. And you'd think the major concern would be the people who actually live here rather than the people who might come here from the UK and other countries.
Yeah, there's a lot of pussyfooting around, really, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. They just look at it's too confusing for them. You know, you're dealing with people who are not particularly bright. I'm talking about the politicians. And you say to them, look, there's this complicated thing here where we've got people who want to live in apartments and we want people to live in apartments and people aren't sure about apartments. And just when we're getting people used to the idea of living in apartments, along comes this thing that means that people next door can be having all-night parties every weekend, and that's putting people off. And they go, yeah, can we just look at the bottom line? How much is this going to cost us? That's what they look at. That's all they look at. And they think people who get, like us, who actually give a damn about apartment living are a bit weird.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that maybe people in houses tend to get better organized, maybe, because they have a lot of pressure groups. You know, if something's going to happen on their street or there's going to be a building built opposite them or something like that, maybe they're just better at getting organized, getting together and making their voices heard. Whereas people in apartments, maybe, you know, we're just all a little bit remote from the street. And we're a bit remote from our neighbours, even though we're living cheek by jowl with them, really. And we're just a little bit more anonymous. I don't know, maybe that's the nature of apartment living, that we don't think so much about the world around us because we're just in our little bubble and we just love it, really.
I think there's a big factor of people in apartments. They don't want to attract any attention to any problems. So
it's the sort of nature of people. They just want to concentrate on their lifestyle, really, and their work or their families or their relationships. They don't want to worry about, like, home maintenance, like lawns and things. So they're not kind of as in touch with their physical surroundings, perhaps.
And there's also, I think there's a sense with apartments, there always has been, that it's a transient thing. Like, it's only now that people are moving into apartments and calling them their forever home. When we started living in apartments in Sydney, it was all about, you know, you would live in an apartment for 7 years and then either move up to a nicer apartment in a nicer area or go and buy a house somewhere. And that because of that transience, people are not particularly interested in investing their time and energy in something that in their minds could affect the value of their property.
Yeah, sure thing.
But I noticed that one of the suggestions that's been highlighted from this recent discussion paper about Airbnb is that they are going to limit the number of people who can stay in an apartment, you know, as a holiday let, to try and stop the party house effect. And as somebody pointed out, I think somebody from, it might have been the author of the paper, said, there's no point in bringing in rules if they're not enforceable. And that is so true.
Yeah.
And because they are not prepared to crack down on people who break the rules, who do not follow the code of conduct, and I doubt if there's very many people in running Airbnbs at the moment who do follow the code of conduct strictly, they don't do anything. There's been no action taken against in the 2 years since the Airbnb list came in, the short-term rental accommodation list and the code of conduct, there hasn't been a single person taken to task over the way they run their building. Not one. Because it doesn't work.
And it's not that it hasn't happened. It's
just God, no. I mean, people are living next to party flats and it's driving them mad all the time. Now, the light touch is the key phrase in all this for me. They are now recognizing that they could have done a bit more. They being, of course, the Liberal government before this one. But the Labour went along with it. There weren't many objections when the rules such as they are came in. When we come back, we're going to look at Great Escape, our little holiday thing, very appropriately since we're talking about Airbnb. That's after this.
So what destination or special offer are you talking about this week for Great Escape's element?
What we're finding is people are responding to the personal stories that we're writing. I did one about our honeymoon disaster. That's had a lot of readers. Yes. And the other week I did a thing about decoding
TripAdvisor
and other review sites. So this week I am doing an edited version of a story that appeared in the Sydney Morning Herald online here in Sydney and in The Age in print about a trip I did with my writer friend Kieran Prendeville.
Oh, yeah.
A hike through Northern Provence.
Very nice. I remember you doing that. It sounded absolutely amazing.
It was really hard. It was very, very, very hard. But good. We were basically hiking from one gourmet boutique hotel that overfed us to the next. You know, and it was just as well that we had been able to do the exercise in between, or we would have come home looking like balloons. I'm going to do a quick edit on that, and that will be on Mild Rover. And the full thing is on the Sydney Morning Herald online. The traveller section is behind the paywall.
It is.
All right. Well, you can get a taste of it on Mild Rover. And if you've got a subscription to the Sydney Morning Herald, then you'll be able to read the whole thing. But I've got a lot of pictures that I took that did not appear in the Sydney Morning Herald. So you'll certainly be able to look at those.
Fantastic. That sounds great.
And Sue, you've got something, a bit of a tribute to your late mum. What's happening with that?
Oh, yeah. Look, I wrote a story for the Herald, which is running tonight, I think. And it's about how when my mum died, it was just awful. But there was an art gallery just near the hospital. And I went in there one day and started talking to the guy who runs it. And he's an Aboriginal artist and he has a lot of Aboriginal art there. And he was really such a nice man. And in the end, I decided to commission a piece of art to sort of mark my mum's death. And he was amazing. He said, he asked me all about my mum. He asked me what kind of music she liked. And he asked me, you know, why was I in Lithgow and how I'd get there to see her and stuff. And then he incorporated all that into the piece of art. And he would send me, he would text me kind of pictures of him doing the art. And because I always travelled up to Lithgow by train and there were five stations in between when I got the fast train, that there's parts of the art that show the different spots for the stations. And he showed me the picture and it was kind of moving to the sound of a train in the background. It was quite incredible. And he was telling me, you know, a lot of Aboriginal people believe that the spirit goes up and meets back with the ancestors. And so people like my mum would be celebrating with the ancestors and they would be kind of welcoming her back.
Right.
And it just kind of gave me an awful lot of solace, really. And I ended up talking to some art therapists, and they were saying art is a really fantastic way of dealing with grief. And that is something a lot of people kind of turn to when they're having a real problem. And so I decided a story about it because I thought it was really interesting. So, yeah, that was my story, really.
And that's going to be on the Sydney Morning Herald. Well, by the time this is up on our website, it will be on the Sydney Morning Herald. It'll be in the paper. Is it going in the paper?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Keep an eye out for that. All right. Well, it's been a technically difficult podcast to pull together today. I hope it all sounds okay. And I got to give a shout out to one of our listeners who pointed out there was a couple of flaws in the last one due to bad editing. She said, "Have you got a new editor? They're not very good." And I said, "No, it's not a new editor. It's the same old me. And I just made a mistake." So,
wow. I would have been tempted to have said, "Yes, we've got a new editor. I will fire them immediately."
Yeah, like you did about me once.
That's true.
When somebody complained about the problem they were having because you had asked me to do something and you said, "Oh, yeah, he's been a problem. We got rid of him." Terrible, terrible person
That's
you
right.
are.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
Okay, so thanks for bearing with me on this technical enterprise. I'm hoping beyond hope that this has recorded and we'll be back in the saddle in Sydney when we record next week's. Thanks for listening.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Flat Chat Wrap podcast. You'll find links to the stories and other references on our website, flatchat.com.au. And if you haven't already done so, you can subscribe to this podcast completely free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Just search for Flat Chat Wrap with a W, click on subscribe, and you'll get this podcast every week without even trying. Thanks again. Talk to you again next week.